It's NPR's All Things Considered. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Robert Siegel. All this year, in collaboration with independent producers, we're examining the lost and found sounds of the 20th century. Today, we meet a man who has used the tape recorder to study the way Americans speak. We went to Philadelphia to visit linguist William LeBove to hear his tapes of the New York City accent. Professor LeBove teaches at the University of Pennsylvania, and he has studied and recorded all kinds of American regional accents. Back in the 1960s, he did field recordings tracking the way New Yorkers say their R's. We were interested in a sound of the century that may be in the process of being lost, the R-less, toity-toid street dialect of the Dead End Kids. LeBove's office library is lined with reel-to-reel tapes and cassettes of the interviews that he and his colleagues have conducted over the decades. And those interviews, it turns out, don't just document the speech of ordinary Americans, they also recount extraordinary moments in their lives.
I could play a little bit of speech just to show you how that works, if I could, because this is very dramatic. I use it to explain how people's speech changes when they get involved. There's a young man, and I asked him this question about, is he ever in a situation where he's in serious danger of being killed? And yeah, he said it happened.
I was invited to a party. It was a wife-swapping party. And I didn't know it was a wife-swapping party. And the husband swapped his wife without her knowing it. And she got angry, and he punched her. And I punched him. He jumped up, and he grabbed a knife. And he came running at me, screaming that he was afraid that I was going to hurt him. And I assured him that I wasn't.
This man speaks what LeBove calls careful New York City speech. It's fussy, he says, an effort to distinguish oneself from a regional accent that is stigmatized on its own turf. The man spoke of the wife-swapping party that turned violent because LeBove asks his subjects if they were ever afraid for their lives. He says when we speak about moments of fear and peril or laughter, we let our verbal hair down.
Of course, we always know that when you are recording, you're going to be a little bit different. And that's going to be important in New York City because in New York City, people shift their styles tremendously. In our interviews, we divide up the spontaneous speech into two kinds. There's the normal interview effect, which we call careful speech. And then there breaks through something we call casual speech, where people are forgetting about the microphone to a certain extent, are so involved in what they're saying. And we get closer to what we really want to know about, which is how do New Yorkers talk to each other when we're not there?
The result is an archive not only of vowels, consonants, and intonations, but of odd slivers of life full of local accent and attitude. LeBove recorded many New Yorkers on his own, but he starts his tour of the New York City accent with a famous recording of a high-class speech pattern we don't hear much anymore.
It's a borrowed prestige pattern, one that was based upon a British model, because until World War II, Americans thought that the proper way to speak was the way the British spoke. And the thing we're going to pay particular attention to is the pronunciation of the letter R at the ends of words. Let's listen.
To those who would not admit the possibility of the approaching storm, to all of them, the past 2 weeks have meant the shattering of many illusions. In some quarters, with this rude awakening has come fear, fear bordering on panic. I do not share these fears.
To me, that's the most thrilling sound you could ever hear, the voice of Franklin Roosevelt mobilizing people of the free world to resist fascism. What I want to call your attention to is the pronunciation of this final R, which, as in British speech, is a vowel. When it follows a vowel, unless the very next word begins with a vowel. For example,
the approaching storm. The approaching storm.
All right, it's not storm.
Storm.
But storm.
Storm.
And let's hear the word fear.
Has come fear. Has come fear. Fear bordering on panic. I do not share these fears.
So that was correct New York City speech as spoken by the master of the language in the 1930s. For ordinary New Yorkers, they're faced with the problem that they were speaking a dialect that was stigmatized and very low standing. This began with the Irish-influenced dialect. One of the oldest fellows I interviewed back in the 60s is Michael Duffy. And his speech is typical of the Irish-influenced New York City speech that shows all the features that people still make fun of. Here he's talking a little bit about his boxing career.
So we're going along, and I see something meet Dick McGee. Well, strange, he says, I don't know you, but none of us are getting nothing for tall. Take it easy. I said, fine, Dick. Who are you? I said, what's that different? I'm doing this for a fella, I guess, like yourself. So sure enough, out we go in the first round. Dick hits me. Oh, I seen everybody dead belong to me. But I shook it off. I was young. I come back to the corner. The guy said to me, watch it. He's trying to knock you out. I said, no kidding. Of course, they can see better than us, you know. So I said, are you serious? He said, yeah, he's trying to put you away. So I got in the second round. He makes a mistake and bang, down goes Dick in a heap. And Dick stays down. He don't get up that level anymore. I thought I'd kill him. Every bottle come at me in the regiment.
I'm not sure what he said, but I love the way he said it.
He's a very fast speaker, and his teeth aren't all in place. But he also used a tremendous number of Irish idioms. I saw everybody dead belong to me, right? I saw everybody who was dead that belonged to me. That's what you say when someone really hits you. Every bottle in the regiment was thrown at him. Today, the strongest influences on New York City speech are from Jewish, Italian, Polish people, and more recently, black and Latino. But the foundations of what we the stigmatized New York City vernacular is from the Irish influence.
Which isn't to say that New Yorkers sounded either like the patrician FDR or like Mr. Duffy. Professor LeBob's ideal middle ground of New York City speech is epitomized by the actor Burt Lancaster, who is dignified and unflinchingly New York.
You want your prisoners to dance out the gates like puppets on a string, with rubber stamp values, impressed by you, with your sense of conformity, your sense of behavior, even your sense of morality.
For Lancaster's Birdman of Alcatraz, it was your sense of behavior. But many New Yorkers speak of your sense of behavior, shunning those R-less tones for what they hear as classier.
New Yorkers, in their anxiety to get away from their local vernacular, are always borrowing a prestige form. And just about the turn of World War II, a big change took place in all of America, and particularly in New York. The model of correct speech was no longer British speech. That was some sort of special, faraway dialect. Standard speech was something like network broadcasting, based upon the inland north, the Great Lakes region, other parts of the Midwest, and that involved pronouncing your R's.
So in LeBov's New York interviews from the 1960s, people often said their R's in two distinct ways. First, in natural storytelling.
Well, I don't like nobody pertaining to me to feel that way, but it's unfortunate that I do. I feel that if it's meant for you to walk out of this house to your death, mister, it's gonna happen. Because if this Mr. Duffin can call me back to work there, when I was so unhappy I could have died there, I give up. Am I a fatalist? Yes. Yes.
Well, there is such a thing as fate, then.
Yes, for me. For the dummy, yes. Or for a person, no. A real clever person believes they make their own fate. But a person who's had a lot of hard knocks and always been down, the underdog, well, I suppose that's the easiest excuse.
No, she doesn't say person, but person.
She's basically an R-less speaker, LeBov says, but give her a set piece to read or a list of words, and social aspiration vies with habit.
I remember where he was run over, not far from our corner. He darted out about 4 feet before a car, and he got hit hard. We didn't have the heart to play ball or cards all morning. We didn't know we cared so much for him until he was hurt.
So that mixture there's another passage wrote that brings the word guard and God together.
She told him to ask the subway guard. My God, I thought that's one of the sure way to get lost in New York City.
We have guard and God, which have the same sound in vernacular New York City pronunciation, but when many people are faced with this, they try to change it. So you can hear that contrast. Now, that is today the most common type of careful New York City speech. And when I did a study one time in New York City department stores, we find we go to Saks, Macy's, and Klein's, right? And I went in and say, excuse me, where are the women's shoes? And fourth floor was the answer. So I then went around the corner and wrote down whether the people pronounced the R's in fourth and floor, and went to various floors in Saks and to Macy's and to Klein's. So these stores are stratified by their prices, by their reputation, and by their advertising in 100 different ways. And the amount of R pronounced is exactly correlated with the status of the stores. The higher the status stores, more R. The more carefully people speak, if you ask them for repetition, they'll pronounce it. If they're younger in Saks, they will pronounce the R more often. If they are on the upper floors, they'll pronounce the R more often. If they are floor walkers, they'll pronounce it most. Next will be cashiers and finally stock boys, and so on. So that there's a very finely graded system. New Yorkers in their everyday speech are still R-less.
Fourth floor.
But right, fourth floor. But,
fourth floor.
A very slight increase. So New York is not giving way to these new fashions that quickly. It's just that when you're speaking carefully and you're about to be hired by an advertising agency, you do everything you can to sound different.
William LeBov says there's another striking thing about New York City speech. It is spoken in a very small geographical area. He played us one more tape of his, one that underscores how a New Yorker can remain geographically close to home but feel linguistically far afield, just across the Hudson.
Yeah, in New Jersey, why is it that they have a certain kind of an accent? But an accent that they have a drawl, just like when you hear the Southern people, you know, down south.
Where you are?
Yeah, that's south. Yeah, that's South Jersey. They have a drawl, just like the Southerners. Yeah, when we went to Newton, so we felt like going to the ice cream parlor, and I says I like to have a neck cream. That's all I said, just the neck cream. He says, oh, you must be from New York. I says, why? He says, oh, you sound very different. I says, you do too. I says, they sound very different. They have their drawl, their accent is a little different, but I understand every word they say.
A recording from the library of Professor William LeBov of the University of Pennsylvania.